We're beginning here 2 lines from the bottom of Kuf Yud Amud Bet. The Gemara yesterday spoke about the greatness of Eretz Yisrael and the halachic implications of that, that one of the two spouses compel the other party to live in Eretz Yisrael, upgrade to Eretz Yisrael, move to Yerushalayim, meaning that that spiritual upgrade is significant enough that we will allow one of the two spouses to compel the other spouse to do it or to force them to divorce. And then we spoke about the difference between one who lives in Eretz Yisrael as if they have a god, one who lives in Chutz Laaretz as if they are worshipping Avodah Zarah. Because if one serves those that serve Avodah Zarah or worship Avodah Zarah, it's as if through a transitive basis you are worshipping the Avodah Zarah. Similar to the way Chazal described in the Midrash Halacha and Vayikra, the Eved Ivri that works for a non-Jew also being as if he works for or services the Avodah Zarah. So now the Gemara now brings a story which indicates that there are opinions or dissenting opinions with regards to this idea of Eretz Yisrael. It's not a question about the Ma'alot of Eretz Yisrael. It's not a question about the Ruchaniyut of Eretz Yisrael and the greatness of Eretz Yisrael. It's a question of whether one should be living in Eretz Yisrael currently. And that is a story about Rabbi Zera of Akamishtamit Minei de Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Zera was trying to slip away from Rabbi Yehuda to bar the Mesach to Eretz Yisrael, because Rabbi Zera was of the opinion that making Aliyah and going to Eretz Yisrael was a valuable thing, and he wanted to do that, and he knew that his Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda, objected to going to Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, he tried to leave town or escape without having to face Rabbi Yehuda before he left. Dama Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda believes, Kol ha'oleh mi-Bavel Eretz Yisrael, over baseh. Anyone who goes from Bavel and makes Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael violates a positive commandment found in the Navi and Yirmiyahu, Shnemar, Bavelo yuvo, v'shamo yu ad yom pokti otam, Noam Hashem, that they will be brought to Bavel, and there they will be until the day that I redeem them, says Hashem. The pasuk is problematic from a number of standpoints. Tosafot already points out one of the problems, which is that's written about the Bayit Sheni. I mean, this is an event that's already taken place. This is speaking about Galut Bavel. Yirmiyahu saying about Galut Bavel that they are not going to come back until the day that Hashem redeems them. But in Yirmiyahu it also says that Hashem will redeem them after 70 years, and that redemption already took place. So why that has relevance to the Bayit HaShlishi, or the redemption that we await currently, is not clear. Tosafot gives an answer, Apagav Daikra Begalut Rishon Ktiv, that's dealing with the Churban HaBayit Rishon, and then the return of the second Bayit, Yesh Lomar Degalut Sheni, Nami Kapit Kra. That the still is makpid on the fact that even after the second Galut, after the second Beit HaMikdash is destroyed, that this is still relevant. One would have to suggest that the Bayit Sheni was not a completion of the vision or the redemption that Hashem had wanted, because they didn't come in full to return to Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, it was only a partial Geula. And that means that the Bayit Sheni was really just a way station on the way to Bayit Shlishi. And that Bayit Shlishi is really just a continuation of that redemption. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda sees this pasuk as being relevant. But more importantly, the pasuk really doesn't say what Rabbi Yehuda says. And that you can see from what Rabbi Zera responds to him. For Rabbi Zera, will be klei sharet ktiv. That pasuk is speaking about the utensils of the Beit HaMikdash. If you look in the psukim in Yirmiyahu, Kav Zayin, it says, Kor Hashem tzvakot el amudim, v'alayam, v'almechonot, v'alyetar kelim notarim b'yazot, ashelo lakacham nebuchadnezzar mech bavel v'glauto at yochonia ben yoyakim melch yudah mishalayim bavela, kol chore yudah v'yushalayim, Kikomar Hashem tzvakot el keisrael el keilim notarim, Beit Hashem u'Beit melch yudah v'yushalayim, So it seems to be that the pasuk is referencing to the kelim that were taken into captivity. There were some that were already taken in the time of Yoyachin, the king of Yehudah. Now we're talking about the time of Tzidkiyahu, and Yirmiyahu is telling him that if you defy the rulership of Nebuchadnezzar, you're going to end up in Galut as well. And all the utensils of the Beit Mikdash that were left behind are now also going to be taken to Bavel. And Hashem says they will remain there until the day that they're redeemed. And that's where Rabbi Zera responds to him, that proof text is not a good proof text, because it's really speaking about the Kelim of the Beit HaMikdash, and not about the people themselves, that they will not be redeemed, even though it seems to be that the two should go hand in hand. Nevertheless, it's not speaking about the restriction against the people coming back until Hashem redeems them. And once again, Hashem already redeemed them, which would have been a fair answer for Rabbi Zera to give, that this is speaking about Bayit Sheni, and we're speaking about Bayit Shlishi. Rabbi Yehuda has a different proof text, which is Ktiv Kra Acharina. There's another pasuk that's found in Shir Shirim. Mishpati etchem benot Yerushalayim batzvaot o bayalot asadeh. So the Raya asks the Benot Yerushalayim to take a shvuah, to make a promise by the gazelles or the hinds of the field. Do not arouse or awaken the love until it is the time, until it is desired. The Shir HaShirim, according to the Masorah of Chazal, is a reference to the love affair between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore the Pasuk is seen here, according to Rabbi Yehuda, as being a request by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Benot Yerushalayim, which seemingly represent the other nations of the world, to take a shvuah, and Bnei Yisrael, that they will not awaken the ava, that love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael, until the time has come. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda suggests here, that the time hasn't come yet. The time that where the love affair will be consummated is in the time of the Geula. Until that point in time, it shouldn't be awakened. And therefore, it's premature if one goes up to Eretz Yisrael before Hashem brings about the Geula. Rabbi Zeira, how does he deal with that pasuk? How shall Yalu Israel bechoma? That is, that Bnei Yisrael should not go up bechoma. Rashi says bechoma means yachad, en masse, biyad chazakah, and through force. So Rashi actually utilizes two descriptors for what bechoma means. It means en masse and by force. Whereas if you look on the side, there's a alternate girsa of kechoma rather than bechoma. If that's the case, kechoma would then imply that it's only about being en masse, like a wall, coming up together in a large group, rather than the additional aspect which Rashi notes, which is coming up by force. So those are the two issues that Rabbi Yezera states, is that one can't return by force and one can't return en masse. And that would be the problem. But he, as an individual, could return to Eretz Yisrael without a problem. Rav Yehuda, Hishbati Achrin Aktive. There's another time in Shir HaShirim it says, Hishbati Etchem. If you look in Shir HaShirim, it actually appears four times, the psukim of Hishbati Etchem Benot Yerushalayim. The Gemara is only going to focus on three of them. What the Gemara is mentioning now is that in Perek Bet, Pasuk Zayin, and Perek Gimel, Pasuk Hey, the exact same Pasuk appears, which is Hishbati Etchem Benot Yerushalayim Mitzvaot, Ubayalot Asadem, Ta'ir Uvim Toru, Et Ava, Achetechpat. So that Pasuk repeats itself both in Perek Bet and Perek Gimel. And so Rabbi Yehuda says those two times that it appears, one is to tell you that what Rabbi Zera says, which Shelo Yalu Yisrael Bechoma, and the other one is to tell you that you're not allowed to go up to Eretz Yisrael until the time of the Geula. Rabbi Zera, how mi baile de Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Chanina? Rabbi Zera says, well, that additional Shvuah that is mentioned in Shir HaShirim, we need for the memra of Rabbi Yossi Bechanina, Damar Gimu Shvuot Alalu Lama. What is the three times that it says, Yishvati Etchem Benot Yerushalayim? Achat, Yolo Yalu Yisrael Bechoma. One is that Bnei Yisrael should not enter en masse or in force. V'achat, Shishbi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Et Yisrael Shelo Yimerdu Ba'umot Olam. Another one is that Hashem tells Bnei Yisrael that they can't rebel against the authority or the rulership of the other nations when they are subjugated until the time that Hashem redeems them. The third one is that the Ovdei Kochavim, while they are subjugating Bnei Yisrael, that they should not do it with such a forceful hand or make it so difficult for Bnei Yisrael. So now Rabbi Zera has used up the Nishbati Etchem Benot Yerushalayim. Again, we mentioned before that there are actually four times that it's mentioned in the Shir HaShirim. It's also mentioned in Perek Hei, Pasuk Chet, which is, Hishpati etchem benot Yerushalayim timtzu et dodi matigidu li shecholat ava ani. And then there's a last time it's mentioned again in Perchet, Pasuk Dal, Hishpati etchem benot Yerushalayim matairu umateoru et ava shetechpats. It seems to be that the three that we're referencing here are the three that mention imtairu v'imtoru, which imply a early awakening or a going before the time, ad shetechpats, until the time that is desired or is proper for it. So it seems to be a shvuah not to preemptively do something. And these are the three things that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says are restricted on Bnei Yisrael. And Rabbi Zero, subscribing to that, says that my going to Eretz Yisrael isn't affected by that. Rabbi Yehuda has to deal with the fact now that Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina says that these three shvuot are already used. Then where does he get his other shvuah to say that you're restricted from going up to Eretz Yisrael? And that Rabbi Yehuda says, im ta'iru im te'oru k'tiv. Says Ta'iru and Te'oruru in each one of them. So there's two verbs that are mentioned in each one of the Shavuot, and therefore there's an additional Shavuah that is mentioned. Im Ta'iru and Te'oruru means that there's really a duplication or two things that are mentioned in the Shavuah, so he has an extra Shavuah. The truth is, if you have Ta'iru and Te'oruru and there are three psukim of Shavuah, you really have six, and that's what the Gemara says now. Rabbi Zera, mi bayaledik Rabbi Levi. He needs it for Rabbi Levi. Damar shei Shavuot alav lama. What are these six Shavuot? Meaning the Shpati, modified by Ta'iru and Te'oruru. What are these six shvuot that are being suggested by the Raya to the Benot Yerushalayim? Tlata Hani Damran, three of them we already mentioned. which were, as we noted before, Shelo Yalu v'chuma, that Bnei Yisrael should not break the Shibud, and that the nations should not be so hard on Bnei Yisrael. The Inach, the other three are, Shelo Yiglu et Aketz, so they should not reveal the end of time. Rashi says, Shelo Yiglu et Aketz, Nevi'im Shebneihem, that the Nevi'im amongst them should not reveal the time of the Geula. So that's number four. Number five is Shaliach Chukua Taketz, that they should not distant the Ketz. Rashi brings two different interpretations of that. One is Babunam. Through their sins, they shouldn't distance the ultimate redemption. That's somewhat difficult because people sin. And by definition, if they're going to sin, they're going to push out the Ketz. So how can you say that Shaliach Chukua Taketz Babunam? So Rashi then offers an alternative, Shaliach Chukua, meaning that the Girsa is not Shelo Yachiku et Aketz, but rather Shelo Yidachaku et Aketz. Shon Dochach, Shelo Yibu B'tachnunim Akach Yoter Midai. Rashi says they shouldn't daven so hard that the redemption should come. Don't press a Kadosh Baruch Hu so hard, because it's only going to come in its time. And if you press too hard and daven too hard, it's going to make it look bad that Hashem's not responding to the prayers of Bnei Israel. So one should not be so adamant in davening for the Geula. Now, one could suggest with regards to Rashi's Bavonam means that the sins of the other violations of the Shavuot here, meaning that don't push out the Ketz by violating the Shavuot that are enumerated over here. So that might be one explanation that makes Bavonam more relevant to this case. Others suggest that you shouldn't spend so much time focused on the Ketz. And we have Memorot like that, Yiperek HaChelek in Sanhedrin, which is Tipoch Atzmatam Shel Mechashvei Ketz, those people that focus and try to calculate the ultimate Geula, that their bones should explode, or the person should be dissuaded from doing such a thing because it's not helpful. And the Marshal takes a different approach, which is that Shelo Yechaku et Aketz means that Bnei Yisrael shouldn't think that the Gula is so far off. They should always believe that the Gula is just around the corner, meaning that Alfa Pishit Mameya, even though it's been delayed, we believe that a Gula or Mashiach can come at any moment. And then the third part, the Shavua, which comprises now number six of the Shavuot, that they shouldn't give up the secrets to the Ovdei Kochavim. Once again, here Rashi gives two interpretations of that. One is the possibility that it's talking about the Sod Ibur, meaning the secrets of intercalating the calendar. Obviously, it's not talking about the basic computations, because those are mathematical, astronomical calculations. Now, whether they Chazal had a better understanding or had insight onto that, that still doesn't mean that it shouldn't be revealed to the nations. That's something that could be observed in the natural world. But rather, there are certain requirements or mesorot with regards to when to make the leap years when they were done, albeit the decision of Beit Din and not done by the calculations. That's one possibility that's mentioned as to what it means lo yigalu et hasod, and that's brought by Tosafot as well, where he calls the pasuk based on the Gemara in Shabbat, the kihi chachmatem uvinatchem leinei ha'amim. What's going to make you unusual or special to the nations is your calculations or your calendar. And that's something that's special about the Jews, and that should not be revealed to the other nations. Rashi brings the second interpretation, which is that they should not reveal Sod Tamei Torah. The secrets of the Torah should not be revealed. Other possibility is similar to the other case before of Shelo Yechaku et Aketz, which might be referencing to the Shavuot themselves or violations of the Shavuot. Shelo Yigalu might also be a reference to the Shavuot themselves, that Bnei Yisrael shouldn't reveal this information to the nations about these six Shavuot that we have. So based on these six Shavuot, the way that Rabbi Zera lays them out, he didn't have a problem making Aliyah because he was an individual, wasn't doing it by force, and he wasn't violating any of the other requirements of the Shavuot with regards to his Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and thinks that that's someone who weakens himself and worships Avodah Zarah, Dichtiv, Shavuot, or one of those extra Shavuot, is a restriction against one making Aliyah, even on a personal basis. Given that they have these Sheish Shavuot, how does one then justify the modern-day state of Israel, which is a serious problem according to these Shavuot? So many point out that the fact that this is an Agadata, and not a halachic discussion in the Gemara, even though it does seem to have halachic implications based on the fact that Rabbi Yehuda wanted to restrict Rabbi Zera, his Talmud, from going up to Eretz Yisrael based on it. So it seems to be it's a halachic opinion, but nevertheless it's found in the Haggadic explanations. But it is absent in any of the decisors in the Rishonim. I mean, none of them bring it down the halacha. It's absent in the Rambam. It's not mentioned in the Ramban, who mentions that Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is a mitzvah. And even in that context, he doesn't mention this restriction at all. As well as the fact that the Rif and others that our halakhic compendiums of the Gemara don't mention this restriction. So that's one possibility as to why these Shavuot are not meaningful in terms of the settling of Eretz Yisrael. The second thing is that the fact that it says that you can't do it by force. But if it's done with the permission of the other nations, that would seem to qualify that we are not violating the Shavuot. And so many claim that the Balfour Declaration and the UN vote partitioning Palestine were implicit permission from the other nations of the world for Bnei Israel or the Jews to return to Eretz Israel. Therefore, it's not a violation of Shelo Yalu B'Chuma. In addition, Lo Yalu B'Chuma might be that you come en masse, means altogether. If it comes in waves, maybe that's not called Yalu B'Chuma. So let's argue that it's also not a violation of the Aliyah movement or moving to Eretz Israel. Even though they came in larger numbers, those numbers still are not everyone coming back. It is only small amounts each time or groups that are coming back each time. And that doesn't violate Shlo Yalu B'Chuma. There's also a Mesora from Rav Chaim Vital, the Talmud of the Arizal, that there's a Braita from the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Shmuel that limits the expiration of the Shavuot to 1,000 years. And after 1,000 years, they expire and they're no longer relevant. And obviously now that would be the case, that we're past 1,000 years since the Shavuot were put into place. And therefore they're no longer valid or relevant to the settling of Eretz Yisrael. There is somewhat of a circular logic that the Maharal applies to these Sheish Shavuot, which is that the Shavuot are really not a Tzav Eluki, but rather a statement about the reality of Galut, and what will be the reality that allows Bnei Israel to survive in the Galut. And therefore, they're telling us what will happen, not what one might or might not do. And therefore, when it says that the Shavuot Shelo Yalu B'Chuma, or that they won't be Moreid Ba'umot, it's not saying that one is not allowed to do that. It just says that that will not be successful until the Shavuot have expired. But if the reality changes and there is a possibility of doing it without using force and without rebelling against the other nations, then that would be a sign that the Shavuot are no longer applicable and that Bnei Israel can leave the Galut. And others suggest that the spirit that rises within the nation to come back to Eretz Yisrael and the Aliyah movement itself is a Pekidah Meit Hashem. That is the Geula that Hashem is going to bring about. And therefore, one can't confuse Hashem's message that the Geula is here with saying that, well, we have to wait for Hashem because it's got to be miraculous and Hashem's got to show His hand. He shows His hand when people start to be inspired to go to Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, that inspiration in itself is a Pekidah Hashem. And somewhat along the lines of the Maharal, it has this circular logic, which is that the Shavuot, when people are ready to come to Eretz Yisrael, the Shavuot will no longer apply because that's an indication that there's Pekidat Hashem, and that's mentioned by the Shult, Meshulot Malko, as a response as to why it's not a problem to be Ole La'aretz. And many point out that there is a mutualism between all the Shavuot here, which means that one is tied to the other. If the other nations act in accordance with the Shavuot that are here, then Bnei Yisrael themselves are bound by the Shavuot. But if one of the parties breaks their commitment, here the Goyim didn't keep their commitment not to subjugate Bnei Yisrael terribly, not to treat them in such a ill manner, which clearly was broken throughout history, but especially during the time of World War II. So then Bnei Yisrael are no longer bound by the Shavuot to not la'alot b'choma or to rebel against them. Therefore, the abrogation of the Shavuot by the nations then frees Bnei Israel to make Aliyah and to do as they please with regards to resettling of Eretz Israel, which is akin to what the Gemara in Sanhedrin says with regards to the Shiva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, that since the nations of the world didn't live up to them, Hashem no longer demanded that they keep the Shiva Mitzvah Bnei Noach, and therefore it has ramifications, meaning if a party doesn't live up to their side of the bargain, then the other side or the other party is freed from their obligations with regards to the Shavuot. That's another reason given. Now, even those that were opposed to the Aliyah or Bnei Israel coming en masse to Eretz Israel or the establishment of the state, that was only true before the state was established. Once it's already established, and say one violated the Shavuot of Shelo Yalu B'Chuma, most or almost a consensus of all the poskim is that one can live in Eretz Israel then, and one can live in the state of Israel, because it's not an ongoing problem once it's done already. If there was a violation when it was done, that violation has passed already, and therefore anybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael today is not in violation of that Shavua, and that Shavua is no longer applicable because we're already past the point where it would have been applicable. So according to those that think it's problematic, once the state was already established, or once Eretz Yisrael is already settled, then that issue no longer applies. And of course, there are many who believe that it's not even a problem and the Shavua was not violated. There is one exception to that, and that's headed by Rav Yoel Teitelbaum, the Satmar Rebbe, who objected to Bnei Yisrael or to Eretz Yisrael establishing statehood or Jewish jurisdiction over Eretz Yisrael based on the Sheish Shavuot that we have over here. He does not restrict necessarily his own followers from coming to Eretz Yisrael, but he restricts them from participating in anything that has to do with the state itself. And then there's a more extreme view of the Neturei Karta, who just seek to undermine the state in many ways because they think that there's a violation of the Sheish Shavuot. And they argue against many of the reasons that were given here, including the fact that the permission of the nations does not mean that you have a UN body that gives permission when there are other nations that object, including the Arab nations that surrounded Bnei Yisrael at the time. They objected to the Jews settling in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there is objection by the other nations. He also notes that there is nowhere where it states in the Gemara here that there's any connection between the Sheish Shavuot. Therefore, the abrogation of one doesn't necessarily release one from the other Shavuot, and he says he doesn't see why one influences the other. And then he also mentions that the Shavuot are not for the benefit of the other nations, but rather for the benefit of Klal Yisrael. And the benefit to Klal Yisrael is if they remain in Galut, that they will get Kapara from that galut, and that will accelerate the redemption, and therefore going to Eretz Yisrael prematurely weighs against that kapara and delays the geula even further. He writes much more about why he objects to all the reasonings that think that it's not a problem, which are found in his Sefer Yoel Moshe, and he even goes as far as to say that these shvua is such a serious violation that it might be covered under your hereg val yavor, which is based on a unique position of the Maharim B. Prague, which doesn't seem to be such a mainstream view, even if you believe there's a violation of the shvua. But nevertheless, that's what's the driving force behind those that believe that the state of Israel is problematic based on these shvuot over here, and that it still remains problematic even after the state of Israel was already founded. Now the Gemara continues to darshan the pasuk from Shir HaShirim, which is that Betzvaot Ubayalot HaSadeh. Why is he taking the Shvua with regards to the gazelles and the hinds of the field? What are they relevant to this? Amar Rav Elazar, Amar Lehem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael, Miatem Mekayim Et HaShvua Mutav. If you keep the Shvuot, then good. Im Lav, Ani Matir Et Besarchem Kvitzvaot Ubayalot HaSadeh. Not, I'm going to make your flesh open hunting season, like that which happens to the hinds and the gazelles where people trap them or hunt them for their meat. It's a strong statement that the punishment for violating the Shavua is significant because Hashem will punish Bnei Yisrael quid pro quo if they are mafkir the necessity to keep the Shavuot, he'll be mafkir them to be hunted and to be killed. Okay, now we switch back gears to statements that are more positive about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and generally the tone of the Gemara as a whole. And throughout the remainder of the Masechta, what deals with this is very positive on Aliyah and Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And this is no exception to that, which is Amar Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar, who is the first generation Amora, Talmid Chover of Rabbi Yochanan, Kladar Eretz Yisrael, Sharoi Belo Avon. Anybody who lives in Eretz Yisrael is inhabiting there without any sin, Shinemar. Because it says, Uvayumar Shachain Chaliti Ha'am Hayoshev Ba Neso Avon. The Pashtun Apostle is speaking about the Shivat Zion, which is Bayomar Shachain, the ones who live there, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, will never say Chaliti, that I am sick or I am weak. Ha'am Yosheb Ba Nesu Avon. Those that are inhabiting the land will be those that whose sin has been forgiven or who don't have any sins to their names. So Rashi says that Bayomar Shachain Chaliti, that one shouldn't complain about the difficult conditions in living in Eretz Yisrael. So certain shouldn't say, Chaliti, I'm weakened by it, or it's difficult to live in Eretz Yisrael, because the people that live there are Nesu Avon, have their sins, have been forgiven of their sins. Now, it seems to be that they have been forgiven of their sins. It's very difficult to argue that people in Eretz Yisrael don't sin by the mere fact that the Galiot happened, and the Torah and the Nevi'im are replete with instances where people did the wrong thing and sinned and are kicked out of the land of Israel. So some suggest that it's the fact that one can attain Kapara in a faster manner here because it's a place where one is more readily accessible to that Ruchani side and focuses on the Ruchaniyut and therefore will do tshuva and attain kapara in a faster fashion. And there are others that suggest that it's focused on the Nesu Avon, which is Avon is a mistaken transgression, which means that something that's not done intentionally. If people do sins intentionally, then Eretz Yisrael is not going to forgive them, whereas those that do them by accident or unintentionally, those will be forgiven in Eretz Yisrael. And there are those that suggest that it's offset by the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, that the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is so important that it then offsets the sins, or some sins, or maybe just the sins that are intentional or done by mistake. Amale Rava, the Ravashi, which is unlikely because the Gemara in one place says that Rava never saw Ravashi, so therefore there's a girsa change to Ravina, that Amale Ravina, the Ravashi, Anan Besovle Chalaim Matznitin La. I have this referring to those that suffer from ailments or sickness, which is, seems to mean that he thinks that the pasuk is describing those that are sick, and those that are weakened by disease, that they are nesuavon. They will be forgiven of their sins because their suffering in their sickness will provide them with that kapara to attain a clean slate. Although the interpretation of Rabbi Elazar seems more likely, given the context in the Perek in Yishayahu, and that which comes before it, speaks to him about Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and the people returning to the land of Israel. Amar Avanan, kol ha-kavur be-Eretz Yisrael, kilu kavur tachat ha-mizbeach. The one who's buried in Eretz Yisrael is as if they're buried underneath the mizbeach. Tivacha, because the pasuk says, mizbeach adama taseli, that one has to make a mizbeach out of earth or out of natural means in order to worship Hashem. Uchtiv hatam, and it says in the pasuk in Devarim, v'chiper admato amo, that the land will provide kapara for Bnei Yisrael. So putting those together, the admato and adama, so the admato, the land of Israel's land, will provide the kapara that the adama, that is the mizbeach, can provide. And therefore it's as if they're buried tachat ha-mizbeach. The Rambam takes it not literally that they're under the mizbeach, but it's as if they were mukrav al the mizbeach. It's as if you were placed on the mizbeach to be, as if you were sacrificed on the mizbeach when you're placed on the land of Israel. The Marsha focuses on the fact that Chazal say with regards to the creation of man, earth that was brought from the tachat ha-mizbeach, because that earth that made his creation possible will also be the means by which he can attain kapara and fulfillment in life. And therefore, the underneath the mizbeach is a reference to that idea that the person is returning to his original place without sin using the kapara the mizbeach or being buried in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, we'll see this is one of the reasons that people like to be buried in Eretz Yisrael even though they didn't live in Eretz Yisrael. Ula v'ragil davi salik le'Eretz Yisrael. Ula, who traveled between Bavel and Eretz Yisrael on a regular basis, is a Talmid of Rabbi Yochanan, and he used to travel to Bavel to bring the memorah to Rabbi Yochanan, the Torah of Rabbi Yochanan to Bavel, and then he used to bring back the memorah from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. So he's an important link in the Mesorah between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, but he used to travel back and forth. Nach nafshei b'chutz la'aretz, unfortunately, one of his trips to Bavel, he passed away. Atu amarle the Rabbi Elazar. So they told Rabbi Elazar about this. Amar, Ant Ula, woe is you, Ula. Al admat mea tamut. Quoting the pasuk in Amos, that through you is a fulfillment of this pasuk in Amos, that on a land that is defiled, you will die. And that's what happened to Ula. He died in a land that is defiled. Amrlo arun oba. Okay, he passed away there, but he's going to be brought back to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. It's much different to come when you're alive to Eretz Yisrael than to come after you've passed away. Yes, so there is benefit from coming after you've passed away and to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, but living in Eretz Yisrael and coming when you're alive to Eretz Yisrael is much greater because, according to the Yerushalmi at least, it's because when you pass away, you're going to pass away in Eretz Yisrael. So you'll pass away on the Admat Tahor rather than the Admat Me'ah. But you could see it from a different perspective, that the ability to be Mekayim Yishuv Eretz Yisrael in the midst of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael is something or a value that's so important that doing that while one is alive has an inherent value versus just coming when one's passed away to get the benefit of being buried in the land of Israel that provides kapara. How gabra denaflei yivama bechoza. So this individual was living in Eretz Yisrael, had a brother that was living in Bechoza in Bavel. After the command of Rabbi Chanina, he came to Rabbi Chanina in Eretz Yisrael and said, "Amalo ma'ol demecha to liyabma. Can I make dirida? Can I leave Eretz Yisrael to go perform yibum with this woman who is my brother's wife who was left childless?" Amale achiv nasa kutit. His brother married a non-Jewish woman, umate, and then died. Baruch ha-makom sheharago. Baruch Hashem that he killed him. Vu yirid acharav. And now you want to go after him? So Rabbi Chanina thought that it was a mistake for this individual to go marry this woman in Bavel. He was also from Eretz Yisrael, and he made yirida to go marry a woman for the sake of marriage. And so he said, because he gave up on living in Eretz Yisrael to go marry someone in Chutz La'aretz, they took a toll on him, and that he died from the fact that he went out. And that's how he viewed this premature death of this individual as being a punishment for his leaving Eretz Yisrael. And he says just because he did something wrong and married, quote-unquote, a non-Jewish woman, non-Jewish not meaning in the sense really not Jewish, but not Jewish in the sense of what we saw at the end of yesterday's daf, someone who lives in Chutz Laaretz, as if they are worshipping Avodah Zarah. So the people or the Jews of Chutz Laaretz are considered to be as if they are over the Avodah Zarah, Kutit, foreigners, or non-Jews. And so now this brother who's living in Eretz Yisrael should make the same mistake and follow after him, and therefore he thinks that the Yishuv of Eretz Yisrael trumps the necessity to perform Yibum, and if the woman wants to come join him in Eretz Yisrael, that's fine. If she doesn't want to join him, then you perform Chalitza, and he has no obligation to perform Yibum. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kishem Shasul Tzeit Meretz Yisrael to Bavel, just like it's restricted for one to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Bavel, Kach Asul Tzeit Mi Bavel L'Shar Eretzot. So too is a restriction against leaving Bavel to go to other nations or other areas. Rabbi Rav Yosef Damrei Tavayu, they both say, Afilu Mi Pumpudita L'Bei Korvei, that even from the city of Pumpudita, which is a central Jewish city in Bavel, to go to a smaller Beit Kovei, a smaller city that didn't have as strong a Jewish population or Torah presence, that's also restricted. So from the context of the way the Gemara is stated, and Rashi says this based on what you see here, and you can see further as the Gemara continues as well, that this has to do with Limud HaTorah, which is as Lefi, Shiei Shem Yishivot, Amar Bitzot Torah Atamid. Bavel is replete with places that are teaching Torah. It's a center of Torah. And therefore, there's a restriction against leaving it, similar to the way that Rabbi Rav Yosef posed that leaving Pumpudita to Beit Kovei is problematic because you're leaving a Torah center to go to a place that's not a Torah center. Though that does present a problem because their first statement is that it's also to leave Eretz Yisrael to go to Bavel. If you think it's all about Torah learning, then why should there be a restriction against leaving Eretz Yisrael to go to Bavel if Bavel is the center of Torah? So either you have to say that they believe that the center of Torah was still in Eretz Yisrael at that time, which is not clear at all, or that there is a restriction against leaving Eretz Yisrael Bavel inherently because of the fact that Eretz Yisrael is Kadosh. But then beyond that, leaving Bavel, once you've left Eretz Yisrael, or if you live in Bavel, to go to other places which are not Torah centers is even more problematic. Though the Rambam thinks, or seems to indicate, that the restriction against leaving Bavel for other places is based on the pasuk that says that you'll go to Bavel until the day that I redeem you. And therefore, the necessity to remain in Bavel is part of that nivuah. Although if that's the case, then the first statement again of Rabbi Yehuda Mishmol doesn't make so much sense, which is, then why is it restricted to leave Eretz Yisrael to Bavel if there's a requirement like what Rabbi Yehuda had suggested earlier, Bavel Yuvol V'Shamu Yiyu, that one's not allowed to make aliyah from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. But then why should there be a restriction from going from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel? Or you have to suggest that this is Rabbi Yehuda quoting his Rabbi Shmuel, whereas his statement before was Rabbi Yehuda of his own opinion. So now the Gemara tells other stories. How did nothing be Pumpadita to Beit Kovei? Somebody did this, left Pumpadita to Beit Kovei. Shamte Rav Yosef. Yosef put him into excommunication because it was a poor decision to leave a Torah center. How did nothing be Pumpadita to Estonia? Somebody left Pumpadita and went to another city, Estonia, again, which either a capital city of the area there or was a non-Jewish city or a city that didn't have a heavy Jewish presence. Shochiv, and he passed away. This young Talmud Chacham, if he really wanted to live, he could have lived. He could have just stayed in Pumpadita. So he saw that his leaving of Pumpadita to go to Estonia was a mistake of leaving a Torah center, and that's, again, probably what influenced Rashi to say that that's the explanation here, which is that leaving a Torah center is problematic. And in these situations, leaving Pumpadita to go Beit Kovei was problematic for this young Talmud Chacham, which seems to indicate that it's connected to his Torah learning. Rabbi Rav Yosef Damrei Tavayu, Rabbi and Rav Yosef both say, Ksherim Shebavel, Eretz Yisrael Kolatan, that the best of Bavel, Eretz Yisrael will accept. Ksherim Shebashar Etzot, the best, or those that are tzaddikim, in the other nations, Bavel Kolatatan, Bavel will accept them. Rashi suggests that those that are closer to Bavel than Eretz Yisrael, then Bavel will accept them. So now Gemara says, Lamai, what is this relevant for? If it has to do with one's yichus, one's pedigree, that's not the case, because we have the Gemara and Mishnayot in Kiddushin that say, Kol ha'aretzot isa le'eretz Yisrael. All other nations or areas are considered to be mixed up vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael. Meaning that the yichus, the pedigree of the people in Eretz Yisrael, is considered to be of a higher quality. And therefore, people coming from other places are problematic for those people in Eretz Yisrael to marry them. Eretz Yisrael isa le'bavel. But Bavel has the highest quality of individuals or pedigree, and therefore even people coming from Eretz Yisrael might be problematic or need to be investigated before they marry someone in Bavel. So you see, in that regard, Bavel is of a greater standing than Eretz Yisrael. And that's not what seems to be indicated by the statement of Rabban Rabbi Yosef. Eleinyan Kvura has to do with burial, which is that those that are Kshirim in Bavel are Ro'oi for burial in Eretz Yisrael. And those from the other places that, again, are closer to Bavel than Eretz Yisrael, those Tzadikim or Kshirim can be buried in the Jewish communities in Bavel, and those in the Jewish communities in Bavel can be buried in Eretz Yisrael. And whether that's because they're Tzadikim, or those that are Tzadikim, or those that are Kshirim, try to have their Aronot brought up. Like we saw what happened to Ula, even though he was from Eretz Yisrael, but he passed away in Bavel, they still brought his Aron up to Eretz Yisrael to be buried. And this is akin to that statement of Rabban Anan before, that there is a value to Kvura in Eretz Yisrael. Remember, you do call it Darba Bavel, Kilu Darba Eretz Yisrael. So anybody who lives in Bavel is as if they're living in Eretz Yisrael. So this is Rabbi Yehuda the Shitato, seemingly, where he says that living in Bavel is just as good or maybe better than living in Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, Hoi Tzion, Imalti, Yoshevet Bad Bavel. Which is, escape those people from Tzion who will go there and live in the place of Bavel. And so the Pasuk seems to equate Bavel with Eretz Yisrael, meaning that the survival of those of Eretz Yisrael will be found in Bavel. Amar Abaye Naktinim B'Bavel Lo Chazia Chavlei D'Mashiach. We have a Masorah that those that live in Bavel will not see the birth pangs of Mashiach. Targama, he explained it that it refers to Ahutzal de Binyamin, a place called Hutzal. Now, de Binyamin seems to be that was added as an extra name to it. Hutzal was the name of the place. De Binyamin is because the people of Binyamin, or those the earlier people that were exiled, came to this area of Hutzal. Bikari Lei Karna de Shezavto. And they call it the Horn of Salvation, that this place will be spared as the Horn of Salvation. The Gemara in other places speaks about that this was an ancient Jewish settlement that came in the time of Yoyachin, and that the Shechina was Shora and the Beit Knesset that was found in Hutzal. And therefore they felt that it was a place that was the remnant of that which was exiled from Eretz Yisrael, and then that would be the place, based on the Masorah, that would be spared from the Chevelei Mashiach. Amar Belazar, Meitim Shebechutz Laaretz Einem Chayim. Those that are passed away in Chutz Laaretz are not going to be part of the resurrection. Shenemar, because it says in the Pasuk in Yechezkel, V'natati Tzvi Be'eretz Chayim, and I'll place my desire in the land of life. So he interprets that, Eretz Shetzivyoni Ba, the land on which I have my desire is about, Meitei Chayim, those that have passed away will be revived or resurrected. Shein Sivyoni Ba, the lands that I don't have my desire, or it's not the desire of my eye, Ein Meitei Chayim, those that are deceased will not come back to life. Meitei Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, the Pasuk says, Ichyu Meitecha Nevelati Yekumun, those that have passed away will come back to life, and those that are corpses will arise once again. My love, why does it have it in duplicate? It must mean that Yichyu Meitecha is Meitim Shveretz Yisrael. They'll call Meitim because it's a softer, more euphemistic language. Nevelati Yekumun is a reference to those that are found Meitim Shebechutz Laaretz. But you see from that pasuk that both of them are subject to resurrection. So then what am I going to do with the pasuk? V'natati Tzvi Be'eretz HaChayim, that my desire will be with the land of the living. And Nebuchadnezzar Udichtiv, that's referring to the Melech of Bavel, Nebuchadnezzar, the Amar Rachmona, Matina Layu Malka, I'm going to bring on Eretz Yisrael, mean conquest of Eretz Yisrael, a king, the Kalil Kitavya, that is swift as the deer, and he will lead a conquest of the known world at the time, including the area of Eretz Yisrael, where he will swiftly conquer the area. So Rabbi Elazar believes that the Meitim of Eretz Yisrael are granted that zchut of Tchiyat HaMeitim. Zod and Chutzaretz are not. Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel disagrees. And then Amar Lei Rabbi, so Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, my Rabbi, Mikra Achad Ani Doresh, I have a pasuk that supports my contention, which is, Notei Neshama La'am Aleha, V'ruach L'Hulchim Ba. Will give a soul to the ones that are dwelling on it, and a spirit to those that walk on it. So that seems to indicate that the resurrection, or the Tchiyat HaMeitim, will only take place for those that are dwellers, those that are found in Eretz Yisrael. Ve'la aktiv nevelati yekumun. What about the pasuk in Yishayahu early on that mentioned that the corpses will arise? How b'nefelim u'dichtiv? It's not speaking about those in Chutz Laaretz that are considered to be nevelot, but they're considered nefelim, who never had a chance at life, and they were always, quote-unquote, nevelot. They will rise from the resurrection, but only those that are found in Eretz Yisrael. Ve'rabbi Abba Bar Mamel, What's he going to do the pasuk that Rabbi Lozer brings as his proof? He violated the Rabbi Abba. He needs it for the position of Rabbi Abba. Don't Rabbi Abba feel shivcha knanit sheberet Yisrael muftach lashi bat olam haba. Even a maidservant, the lowliest of the quote-unquote Jews that are found in Eretz Yisrael, because she is chayevet in mitzvot, just like a woman, but she doesn't have the level of an Eved Kenani who gets Brit Milah as well, so she's even below an Eved Kenani, but nevertheless, she will be zucha to Olam Haba because she's found in Eretz Yisrael. K'tivacha la'am aleha, k'tivatam shvulachem polim ha'chamor by Avram Avinu, when he's going to the Akedah, he says to the two Na'arim that are accompanying him, you sit here with the chamor, am ha'domeh l'chamor, nation that's similar to a chamor, and he's interpreting am and am. The am that's referenced to in the pasuk in Yeshayahu is the same am that is domeh l'chamor. So even a Knani that lives in Eretz Yisrael has that zchut that they will be zocher to Olam Haba. Ruach l'chochim ba. What does he do with the ruach l'chochim ba? Amar Yirmi Abba, Amar Biyochanan, komalech arba amot b'Eretz Yisrael, muftach lo shu ben Olam Haba. And one who walks four amot in Eretz Yisrael is promised that it will be zocher to Olam Haba. Despite the fact that he says that those meitim in Chutz Laretz will also be zochet to resurrection, he still acknowledges that Eretz Yisrael has a mila to it, and that mila is evident by the pasuk that Rabbi Lozer uses his proof text that only those that are in Eretz Yisrael will be resurrected. He says that it references the fact that even those on the lowest level in Eretz Yisrael will be zochim no lam haba, and similarly, someone who walks through Eretz Yisrael will have this chut to gain access to Olam Haba. And even though every Jew is promised Olam Haba, nevertheless, these are either will make it easier or more direct or allow them to do without Isurim, an upgraded form or access to Olam Haba. Rabbi Lazar, Tzadikim Shebechutz Laretz Einam Chayim. So when it says, according to Rabbi Lazar, those Tzadikim that passed away in Chutz Laretz are not going to come back to life. Rabbi Lai, Ayadei Gilgul. They'll come back by, the word can be interpreted one of two ways. Gilgul could either mean through rolling, which is going to come obvious from the upcoming Gemara. That's what the Gemara means over here. Or it can mean Gilgul, Ayadei, through reincarnation, that they'll come back again. But that's not going to be the meaning here in this context. Matki for Rabbi Abba, Sala Rava, Gilgul Tzadikim Tsaru. If they have to roll back to Eretz Yisrael, that's painful. That's difficult. That's not something that Tzadikim deserve. So Rabbi Michilot Nasot Lachem Vakarka. They'll have tunnels that will allow them access back to Eretz Yisrael. As Rashi says over here, the tunnels will allow them to walk back upright. They won't have to roll back. The rolling would be Tsar. So they'll be able to walk through those tunnels. So the Tzadikim in Chutz Laretz will have access to the resurrection, but they'll have to come from Chutz Laretz to Eretz Yisrael to be zocheh to the resurrection. So their resurrection will be more difficult, but in the end they still will be zocheh, even according to Rabbi Elazar. Yaakov Avin asked Yosef and then his children subsequently to bury him in Eretz Yisrael by the kvura of his avot. Amarkarna dvarim bego, there are secrets hidden in the statement of Yaakov Avinu. That he was a complete tzaddik. If he knows, like we said now, that those in Chutz Laretz are zochet to the resurrection, why did he trouble his children to take them all the way back to Eretz Yisrael? Because maybe he will not be zochet to a tunnel, and therefore he'll have to suffer the Gilgul. Although the alternative girsa is, Shaloki Belalav Tsar Michilot. He didn't want to have to experience the difficulty of going through the tunnels to return to Eretz Yisrael, so he wanted to skip that step, even though he's a tzaddik and would have been zocheh to resurrection. Similar statement you can say about that which Yosef said. Yosef also makes the children promise that they're going to take him back to Eretz Yisrael. And Amar Rabbi Chanina, Dvarim Bego. There's secrets or there's hidden messages in that which he said. Yodea Yosef, Batsmo, Shetzadik Gomorrah, he knew that he was a complete tzaddik. V'meitim Shebechutz Laretz Chayim, Lama Yitriach Et Echav, Arba Meot Parsa. Why did he trouble them to take him 400 Parsa, which is the size of Eretz Yisrael according to the Agadah and other places? Shem Elo Yizkeh the Mechilot. Maybe he would not be merit the Mechilot to take him back, and he'd have to do Gilgul, or Shema, he didn't want to have Kibel Alav, he didn't want the difficulty of going through the tunnels. And Yosef was more so than his father Yaakov, because Yaakov, you could have argued, wanted to go back to Kvurot Avotav. He's buried in Hebron with the remainder, with his parents. Yosef, in the end, is not buried with the family in a family plot. He's buried in Shechem. And therefore, the fact that Yosef has to go back to Yisrael has significance in the fact that even though there's resurrection in Chutz Laretz, he wanted to skip that step or the problem of the Mechilot. Shakulei Alchu the Rabbah. Rabbah's brothers sent him from Eretz Yisrael. His brothers lived in Eretz Yisrael. Rabbah seemingly did live in Eretz Yisrael at one point, or they made Aliyah and left. Rabbah didn't come with them. They send him over this Agadato, that it's worthwhile coming to Eretz Yisrael. And then they send an addition. Ilfa Mosif Badvarim. And Ilfa also said something that's relevant to you. His person was madly in love with a woman in Chutzaretz, and he wanted to do Yiridah to go marry her. Once he heard this Agadato about Yaakov Avina, he endured the pain of not going to marry his love, Ad Yom Muto, until the day of his death. And it's a play on the word Gilgul. He was Gilgel Batzmo. He endured or held back or resisted the temptation to go to marry her and leave Eretz Yisrael. So he suffered that suffering in order that he wouldn't have to suffer the Gilgul of the Mechilot of coming back to Eretz Yisrael after he passed away. So again, here we see the value of being in Eretz Yisrael, and they're trying to convince their brother Rabbah to come up to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. And even though you're a huge gadol in Bavel, you're there, you're the top of the ladder, and you're going to learn by yourself. Over here, you can come and learn by a Rebbe. If you say there's no Rebbe for you here in Eretz Yisrael, there is a Rebbe here. Umanu Rebbe Yochanan. Rebbe Yochanan is still alive. He's the great leader of Eretz Yisrael, and he could be a Rebbe for you. From here, you see, and which is more obvious in Yerushalmi, that Rebbe Yochanan lived a very long time. He's interacting with Amoraim from many generations, including here where Rabbah and Rav Yosef, who are third generation Amoraim in Bavel, they are brothers of Rabbah, are suggesting they should come to Eretz Yisrael and still be under the tutelage of Rabbi Yochanan, who is a first generation Amora in Eretz Yisrael. If you don't make Aliyah, at least take care of these three things, or be careful about these three things. Altaber b'shiva, don't sit too much. Shiva kashe l'tachtoniyot, because sitting too much is bad for hemorrhoids. Altaber b'amida, don't stand too much, because amida kashe l'lev, standing too much is not good for the heart. Altaber b'halicha, don't walk too much. Shalicha kashe l'anayim, because walking too much is not good for the eyes. Ella, you should be apportioned in an even manner. Shlish b'shiva, your waking hours, a third of them should be sitting. Shlish b'amida, a third of them standing. Shlish b'iluch, and a third of them movement or walking around. Now, they qualify what type of yeshiva this is. Kol yeshiva she'eni masmicha, any sitting down that doesn't have support in that sitting. Rashi speaks about beds or laying to the side. Amida nocha amenu, standing up is better than that. Amida, sakadatcha, you think standing is better? Barmat amida kasha lelev, standing is bad for the heart. Al yeshiva she'ein basmicha, a sitting that doesn't have support, amida sheish basmicha nocha amenu, standing that has support is better than that. Chen amru, and in addition to that which they sent to their brother Rabbah, they sent the following information as well, which is, Yitzchak v'Shimon v'Oshaya amru davar echad. These three individuals said the same thing, which is halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda b'pradot, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda with regards to mules. Mules are a crossbreed between a chamor and a sus, between a donkey and a horse. And the question is, that mule, once it's born, what is it classified as? Is it classified as a horse, or is it classified as a donkey? That'll make a difference for Kilei Be'ema about to what you can mate with that pered. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Pirda Shetava, a Pirda that wants to be mounted, Eimar Bimer Alea Lo Sus V'Lo Chamor. You can't allow it to mate with a horse or a donkey, Elamina. You have to find something that is the exact same makeup as the mule itself. And as Rashi explains over here, that this argument between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is that the Chachamim say that an animal's yichus is based on its mother. So whatever its mother is determines the species of the animal. So if the mother in the mixed breed was a donkey, then the mule is considered a donkey and it can mate with the donkey. If the mule's mixed breed with the mother was a horse, then the mule that is born of that mixed breed can then mate with a horse. And so they believe that it all goes after the mother. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda believes that we're choshesh lezera'av. We worry about the father's contribution as well as the mother's contribution. He's a safek as to which one is the governing species over here. And therefore he won't allow you to have a mule that mates with a horse or a mule that mates with a donkey, because one of the two, quote unquote, parents was one of those two species, and therefore it could be a problem of kilei behema. So the only way to mate a mule is to have a mule that's created or generated by the same mixture of father and mother, because then it's the same species, no matter what. They have the same type of father, same type of mother, and then whatever that species is called, that mule, is then the same as another mule with the same heritage. Therefore, you can only be mated with mina, with the same, that which is the same. Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, Yitzchak, who are they referring to when they said Yitzchak? That's Rabbi Yitzchak Nafka. Shimon is referring to Rabbi Shimon Pazi. Primary line, some say it's Rish Lakish, Rav Shimon ben Lakish. Hoshaya, Zeh Rabbi Hoshaya Birabi. So all these individuals, Amoraim, say the Locha is like Rabbi Yehuda, and so they pass that information to Rabbah. But you see here that they were trying to convince their brother Rabbah to be Ola Eretz Yisrael, which he did not do, he stayed in Bavel. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Amei Aratzot Enam Chayim. Those people that are Amar Aretz, that don't learn Torah, are not steeped in Torah, are not going to be resurrected. Shenemar, Metim, Bal Yechiu. Those that pass away will not live again. So Tanya Nami Hochi, we have a brayta that supports this contention of Elazar. Meitim ba'yichyu, yachol akol, you would think it applies to everybody. Tamar lomar rifayim ba'yakumu, those that are weak will not rise again. So it seems to me the pasuk has two statements, the meitim ba'yichyu and rifayim ba'yakumu. Bimrapeh atzmo midivrei Torah, kotuv midaber. Those that will not come back to life are those that are weak. And those that are weak are those that are not weak in their learning of Torah. So Amalei Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan gets upset. Again, he's a Rebbe to Rabbi Lazar, but he's also a peer because Rabbi Lazar is a Talmud Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan's upset by Rabbi Lazar's drasha. He says, Lo nechel amarayu damart lu hochi. The master of these individuals, meaning Hashem, who's the master of these Amei Aretz, is not going to be happy with this. Because the right interpretation of the pasuk is, Ha'u b'rape atzmo la'avodat kochavimu dikhtiv. That's the reference to, or that's the meaning of the pasuk.
Speaking of those that are weak and have succumbed to the avera of Avodah Zarah. Speaking of those that are weak and have succumbed to the avera of Avodah Zarah.
Amarlei mikra acher ani doresh. Pasuk says, I have another pasuk that supports my contention, dikhtiv. Kital orot talecha ve'eretz tirfaim tapil.
Which is a continuation of the pasuk that we quoted on Amud Aleph, Ichu meitecha neveilati yukumun, hakitzu v'rananu shoch ne'afar, kitalo ro talecha, eretz Rephaim tapil. Those that have passed away will be revived, the corpses will rise up, awake, and shout in joy, those that dwell in the dust of the earth, for the dew is like the dew of fresh growth, for your dew is the dew of light, and the earth shall bring forth the spirits. But the other possibility is Eretz Ephraim Tapil, those that are weak will remain in the land and not rise up.
He interprets the puzzle, call Mishtamesh Bor Torah, anyone who utilizes the Or of the Torah, Or Torah Mechayeyu, then the light of Torah will bring him to life. And the Tal Du is considered to be something that brings back life. It's the Tal of Tchiyat HaMeitim. Tal is something that cannot go away from the world, as the Gemara Tanit says, because it is the Chiyut, it is the sustenance of the world. Anybody who does not use the Torah or does not steeped in Torah, then the light of Torah will not bring him back to life. After Rabbi Elazar noted that Rabbi Yochanan was very uncomfortable with his drasha, I found the salvation for the Amei Haaretz from the Torah that they will also participate in Tchiyat HaMeitim. It says, you that are close to Hashem, that embrace Hashem, you will live today. Is it possible to get close to God? God is like a consuming fire. How can one get close to a consuming fire? You have to keep your distance. Those that represent the Shekhinah, those that represent God, one should get close to. So that's someone who marries off a daughter to a Talmud Chacham, or someone who does business on behalf of the Talmud Chacham, and takes their money and invests it on their behalf, or a Maneh Chachamim in a Chasav, one who gives of his possessions to the Talmud Chachamim, Pasuk considers it as if he's connecting to God. Masha points out that there's three different ways that the Am Haaretz can connect to the Talmud Chacham. One is bodily, which is by giving the daughter to the Talmud Chacham. One is through his assets, which is that he gives of his assets to the Talmud Chacham. Or through action, whereby he invests on behalf of the Talmud Chacham. So those three areas allow them access to the Talmud Chachamim, and the Talmud Chachamim will learn Torah, which is Domeh La'esh, which is like a fire. So they're less similar to the Midabek B'Shechinah. And that's the drasha of Rabbi Akiva, of Rabbi Shimon Manasseh of the 8th, Hashem Lokecha Atira, that what is the ribuy there? It's the Rabot Talmidei Chachamim that are like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that you have to have fear of them, like you have the fear of heaven. And we have a similar drasha, which is the Avat Hashem Lokecha Ludav Kabo. You must love Hashem and be close to Him. Can one really be close to God? So through the Talmidei Chachamim, one can attain or access that closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the Gemara in Sota and Daf Yudalid, the Gemara has a similar memra and says, how can one be Dabek B'Shechinah? Ella, you have to be medame l'shchina. You have to do things that God does. You have to emulate God. And by emulating God, you will then be close to God. V'alachta b'drachav. You will follow in his ways and be dovek by shchina. In the future, the tzaddikim are going to sprout forth from Yerushalayim. Shenemar, because it says in the pasuk in Tehillim, which we're going to darshan the entire pasuk, but they're going to do it piece by piece, which is v'yatzitzu mi'ir kesev aretz. They will sprout in the cities, I mean people will sprout in the cities, or like the vegetation or the grass of the earth. Bein ir, and the term ir, when it's not defined, is a reference to Yerushalayim. Shenemar v'ganoti ela ir azot. When Akash Baruch Hu says to Chizkiyahu Melech, because of his tefillah, that he won't allow Melech Ashur to conquer Yerushalayim, and then you have the tremendous miracle that takes place, which saves Yerushalayim when the entire Assyrian army is wiped out by Malachim overnight, and sends Sancheriv running away from Yerushalayim, Shem says, Ganuti, I will protect this city. Ha'ir, that's the city, is a reference to Yerushalayim. Ram Chir Bar Yosef, Atidim Tzadikim Shem Duma Mosh Busheim. Tzadikim in the future will come up fully clothed. Kava Chomer Michita, you can learn that from a kernel of wheat. Machita Shenikvira Aruma Yotzeit Bekama Levushim. A kernel of wheat that's planted naked in the ground, then bursts forth and grows with a full shaft of wheat and comes out totally dressed. Tzadikim Shenikvira Levushim. Tzadikim that were buried in their clothing, Achat Kama Vekama. Then certainly so. Tozo Rehir comments as to whether that means that when they are buried in Tachrichim, that means that they will also get up in that which they're buried in their Tachrichim. Although he quotes from other Gemaras that seem to indicate that in the future, the Tzadikim will not get up in their Tachrichim, but rather in their fully clothed, in their clothes that they wore while they were alive. The Rebekiv Eger points out that the Shami that Tosfot seems to be quoting is actually a machloket between Rabbi and the Chachamim, as to whether he comes back in Tachrichim, as the Rabbanan say, whether he comes back fully clothed, like Rabbi says. In the future, Yisrael will burst forth with full-made cakes or danishes, clay melat, and fine wool clothing. Shenemar, so this is the same pasuk that we saw in Tehillim Ayin Bet before, of Yatzitzu Meir Keisev, and that pasuk it also says, about Yehi Pisat Bar Baretz, there'll be abundance of grain in the land. And now, obviously, he's playing on the word pisat, and as Rashi notes over here, that there's two ways that you can interpret the pisat, which is pisat bar means a hand full of grain. Of a grain, it fills the whole hand. That's a baked good. And therefore, you're going to have fully baked breads or goods that come out of the ground because they fill the hand. So pisat is the hand that captures the grain or the bar. A hand full of grain means not the grain itself, but rather something that fills the hand made from grain, and that's a pot. Uklimilat darush pisat lashon ketone pasim. It's learned from that cloak of Yosef, which is ketone pasim, which we've mentioned in other contexts from the Gemara in Shabbat, that notes that for that little excess milat that was given to Yosef at Tzadik, that Bnei Yisrael ended up in Mitzrayim, and that refers to pisat yad. Ketone pasim comes from pasa yad, comes from the palm of the hand, and there Rav Yoel Ben-Nun suggests that Yosef had a long sleeve cloak, versus the brothers that had short sleeves cloak, and we spoke about the relevance of that in that context. Tarabanan, he pisat bar ba'aretz, Rosh Harim, so they continue to quote that pasuk, that he said bar ba'aretz, the abundance of grain in the land, Rosh Harim at the tops of the mountains. Amro atidachi ta'ash titamer kedekel. The future wheat will grow as high as a palm tree. V'la b'Rosh Harim, and will grow like palm trees on the tops of mountains. Shema tomar yesh tzar l'kotzra. So maybe if you say it's so tall, it's going to be hard to harvest it. Tamalomar yir ash. So this is the continuation of that same pasuk. It's a part of the same pasuk that's found in Tehillim Ayin Bet, where it says, "He pisad bar baaretz birosh harim yirash kelavanon pirio." Yatzitzu meir keisav aretz. So now they're darshaning the yirash kelavanon pirio, that it will burst forth with fruit like the forests of Lebanon. It will make noise or shake with fruit. The abundant fruit will rustle like the forests of Lebanon. Kadosh Baruch Hu mevi ruach. We bake ginzav. Kadosh Baruch Hu brings a strong wind from his storehouse. He blows it on the wheat. Mashrat salta. And that strong wind basically mills the wheat kernels and it drops down fine flour. And he goes out to the field and brings back something that fills his hand. From that he can feed his family, take care of himself and his entire family. So whether that means that it's akin to the agarata before, that you have a fully baked item that we produce, or you'll get the fine flour and you won't have to work for it, and instead you will just take the fine flour and then bake that into whatever he likes. So the Gemara continues to speak about the great produce that will come from Eretz Yisrael, and they quote from the Pasuk in Hazino, Im Chelev Klayot Chita. Full Pasuk that they're quoting is from Parshat Hazino, it's talking about the great bountifulness, Chemat Bakar V'Chalev Tzon Im Chelev Karim Ve'elim B'nei Bashan V'tudim Im Chelev Klayot Chita V'dam Einav Tishteh Chomer. So it's talking about the abundance of, or the wealth that people have, comes from the fats of the kidneys, will be the wheat. Amru atidach hitashite kishtei klayot shoshor agagodol. In the future, the size of the wheat kernels in Eretz Yisrael will be the size of the two kidneys of a large ox. And don't think that's so strange. Or a shual kinein the lefet. In Eretz Yisrael, there was a case where a shual nested, gave birth to their young inside of a turnip. They carved out a turnip and gave birth to their young there. Shaklu, they took that turnip after it had finished giving birth to its young there, and that which was left over after it carved it out, umatsubo shishin litra shel tzipori, and they found the weight of that remaining part of the turnip was 60 litra, which is a very big number, as you see that there is a possibility of things growing to that size.
And this is also noted in the Gemara in Ta'ani, Daf Chav Gimel with Aleph, where the Gemara says, in the time of Shimon ben Shetach, the rain used to come in its proper time. That they had produce as with large sizes. And they stored up examples from that so people could see in the future that sin causes the fruits not to be of productive nature or of a large nature. But there are examples or periods of time where they had this abundance of vegetation and large sized crops, and therefore it's not impossible that in the future such a thing will happen.
Tanya Amar Rav Yosef Maseh B'Shichin V'Chad She'iniach Lo Aviv Shlosha B'Dei Chardal, that he left him these three stalks of mustard, V'Nifshach Echad Mehem, and one of them branched off, Nitzabo Tisha Kabin Chardal. There was 9 kav of mustard from that, V'Etzav Sichucho Bo Sukat Yotzrim, and the wood that was produced from this mustard was able to be used to cover over a hut of craftsmen or producers of clay utensils. Harav Shimon Tachlifa or Chalafto, Kelach Shel Kruv, Eniach Lanu Abba, a stalk of cabbage was left to us by our father, Vayinu Olim V'Yordim Bo B'Sulam. It was so big that we used to climb up and down a ladder in order to pick off the leaves from the top of it. So they're giving evidence of the fact that it's not impossible that Eretz Yisrael will produce produce of these type and volume in the future. V'Dame Nav Tishteh, so continuing from that pasuk in Hazino, it says that the blood of the grape, they will drink chamer, the wine that is intoxicating. Amru, loko olam hazeh, olam haba. This world is not like the world to come. Olam hazeh yesh bo tzar, the tzor. In this world, you have the difficulty of having to harvest the grapes, lidroch, and then to press the grapes. Olam haba, whereas in the world to come, evi anava achat, you bring one grape, the karon. It'll be the size that you bring it in a wagon, or besfina, or in a boat. Maniach b'zavit beito, and you place it in the side of his house, in a corner of his house. Sapek mimeno b'kipitos gadol. And then you take the wine out of it, like you have a tap on it, on that grape, and it produces wine like you would get from a large keg. Beitzav, and the vines that are carrying this grape will be so great, of so much quantity of wood, b'sika tachadat avshil, use them for firewood. And no, each grape will give no less than 30 sa'ah worth of wine. Shenamar, v'dam einav tishteh chamer. Which we already explained is that the quote-unquote blood, the juice of the grape will produce intoxicating wine. Al tikra chamer, don't call it wine, ela chomer, which is a measurement of 30 sa'ah that the Gemara learns from the Pasuk in Yechezkel. Kiata ravdimi, Amar, Maidichtiv. Now again, another description of the bountifulness of Eretz Yisrael. Now they're quoting the pasuk from the bracha that Yaakov gives to Yehudah. Usri the Geffen Iro, Usoreka b'nei Atono, Kibes v'yan nevusho, v'dam anavim suto. He tethers his donkey to the vine, and the offspring of the donkey he ties to the choicest of his vines. He washes his garments in wine, and his robe in the blood of grapes, which is a description of the plentifulness of wine and vines that people will use them for mundane activities like washing their garments. They'll wash in wine instead of water because wine will be so plentiful, and they'll tie up their animals to the vines because there will be so much bounty of grapes and vines. And then the puzzle continues afterwards,
The eyes are darkened or bloodshot by the wine. Uven shinayim mechalav. Teeth are made whiter by the abundance of milk. So Gemara is now going to interpret that. Osrei gefen iro in the chagul gefen with gefen sheretz yisrael shein tzarich ir achad libtzor. That each vine in Eretz Yisrael will be so big that it will require a full city in order to harvest it. Osrei ka b'nei atono in the chagul ilan tzarach sheretz yisrael. There's no non-fruit-bearing tree in Eretz Yisrael shein motzim mish masui shtei atonot that will produce two donkeys worth of loads of wine. So they're playing on the word soreka with the sin and saying that it's a samik, sarak. So a tree that wasn't fruit bearing, that tree will produce, b'ni otono, the amount that two donkeys need to carry. And the production will be production of wine, because that's what the beginning of the pasuk was talking about. Shema tomayin nebo yayin. You would think that the juice that they produce is not wine. Tamalomar, kibes b'yayin levusho. The continuation of the pasuk says that it's been so plentiful in wine that they're going to wash their clothes in wine. Meshem etamayin with dom. Maybe it won't be red wine. Tamalomer v'dam einav tishteh. Chamer. So dam, the color is a blood coloring. Meshem etamayin einu marveh. Maybe you say it will not intoxicate. Tamalomer suto. That is robe he will wash in the blood of the grapes. But the play on suto is like from the word sota or stia. Something that causes a person to deviate or causes their behavior to deviate, which is the intoxication of the wine. Shema tamarim botam, and you'd think maybe it's not tasty. Tamar lomar, hachli li einayim miyayin. Kochech shetoamo. Any palate that tastes this wine, omer li li. Wow, wow. This is so great. Shema tamar li narim yafeh, ulizakenim eno yafeh. You'd think maybe it's only good for the youngsters, but not for the elderly. Tamar lomar, uben shinayim mechalav. Al tigra li ben shinayim. Don't say that it's making the white teeth white, but rather ben shanim. Those of an age will enjoy this treat. The Gemara says, Pashti dekra b'maiktiv. What's the basic understanding of the pasuk? That's a nice drosha, but what's the basic understanding of the pasuk? Now, the basic understanding of the pasuk is that this is going to be something where there's going to be bountiful or plenty of wine and milk, and that's the pashtut pasuk. Now, Pashti dekra over here, as the Marsha points out, is not going to be the pashtut pshat in the pasuk, because they're going to give another drosha on the pasuk. But relative to the previous explanation, it's more of a pshat in the pasuk. And that is Ki Ato Ravdimi Amar Amra Knesset Yisrael Fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bano Shalom Ramuz Be'enecha Debosim Michamra. Hint through your eyes that they are intoxicated with wine. Ve'achvili Shinayich Debosim Michalva. And show me your teeth, flash me your white teeth that are filled with milk. Meaning that we want to know that Hashem is pleased with our behavior, pleased with us. And therefore the pasuk is stating that Hashem will show favor towards Klal Yisrael by showing eyes that are dancing or full of laughter and a face of joy towards Bnei Yisrael, and also show a laughter or a smile that will reveal the teeth. That's the red and white that's been spoken about here, that the eyes should sparkle with laughter and fun, and the teeth should demonstrate a smile or laughter, meaning that Hashem is pleased with us. Sayle Rabbi Yochanan, that holds Rabbi Yochanan's position. Amar Rabbi Yochanan tova malbin shinayim lechaviro yoter mashkeu chalav. Better to flash someone a smile than to give them milk. Shinemar leben shinayim mechalav. Al tigra leben shinayim ela libun shinayim. The white of one's teeth is something that's great to show or demonstrate to others. Meaning a smile is more curative and pleasing and helps the other person more than the actual food that you give them. All right, we're going to stop here, 8 lines from the bottom of Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Bet.